Here's a question. Tough question. What is this?
Paper.
It's a piece of paper. It's money. What else is this?
Concentrated energy.
Concentrated energy.
Represents labor.
Symbol represents labor. Well, you got it right. So, concentrated energy, or
I told him what that was.
Money is life force. DK uses the term crystallized prana. You all know what prana is, chi is, life force, etheric force. So money is concretized life force. And so I'm going to borrow your five again for a minute and then I'll return it.
Should have put it in your pocket, Ed.
You take an hour of your life and you trade it for this. 50 an hour, 100 an hour, 500 an hour, 10,000 an hour, whatever. You are trading your life force, an hour of your life, that you will never, ever be able to live again, and that's the exchange. And so hopefully you're providing life force energy, and hopefully what's coming back is an equal trade. So when there's a good equal trade, it works. When it gets out of balance, that's when we have some problems. So, question. This has never even occurred to me. Like, but does the way a currency is designed, does that affect people's behavior? And it's like, when somebody asks me that question, it's like, what are you talking about? Dollars a dollar's a dollar, right?
No, I think it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a look at how it does in just a second here, because it absolutely does in ways we are not even aware of. And as you know, when you become aware of something, then you can start doing something about it. But we've all had that experience of you get a revelation and you go, oh my God, I had no idea. And then you see all the ramifications. But we're going to jump into the polarities first. This is a great example of balance. We all have positive and negative attributes within us. We all have wheat and tares within us, at least I do. And we have this masculine and feminine qualities. So just going to run down this really quick. And we refer to masculine as yang, feminine yin. A masculine quality would be hard versus soft. And maybe versus isn't the right word, but I'm going to use that anyway. Masculine projecting, feminine receiving, logic, intuitive. And you are familiar with right and left brain qualities, and that kind of fits in here too. Competition, cooperation, need them all. Masculine, hierarchical. Feminine, more egalitarian. Central authority versus mutual trust. Technology, interdependence, interpersonal skills, assertive versus nurturing. Controlling, empathetic. Independent versus relationship oriented. And then an emphasis on having and doing versus being. And then masculine would have a transcendent God. God is out there. Feminine would be more God immanent, God within me. Which side's right?
Both.
Both. Which side would you say is dominant in our society and maybe the world?
Male.
Definitely these qualities. And so that has produced the goodness we see, and it has also produced a lot of the darkness and the bad stuff that's going on. So the name of the game is, how do we bring these into balance? So we're going to take a look. We're going to start out with taking a look at masculine qualities in currency. So there's a wonderful story called The 11th Round, and about at the turn of the last century, 125 or so years ago, there was this little community in the outback of Australia. About 100 families, subsistence living, farming community, and it was pretty tough to make a living. But it was a really tight community. Cooperation, people depended on each other. And if something went wrong, if somebody had a problem, the whole community stepped in to solve it. Your barn burned down, there'd be a barn raising. Everybody would show up, they'd build your barn. Somebody got sick or hurt and they couldn't take care of their animals or their farm, everybody else would step in and help them out. Years ago, I was selling accident insurance up in Montana. I was talking to this farmer in this little community of about 250 people, and he said, yeah, I had a car accident. I was almost paralyzed for a year, couldn't get out, couldn't do anything. Cows were taken care of. You know, everything was taken care of, and I just said, I can't compete with that. That's way better than what I have to offer you. But very cooperative oriented. Well, the means of exchange was barter. And so every Saturday, market day, was this lively hubbub of people bringing their goods and things that they had to exchange. But there was all the challenges of having barter. Like, people are chasing their chickens around going, well, are three chickens worth this ham? Well, I don't really need a chicken. And gosh, I have a blanket and I'd like to get my horse shoed. Will you trade a blanket for shoeing my horses? So there was all of this challenges of a barter system. It has its place, it works, but you know, if I need something and you have what I need, but I don't have anything to exchange, it doesn't work very well. So definite limitations. So one day in this marketplace, this stranger in a nice suit and shiny shoes shows up, and he's watching people chase chickens around and watching all the haggling going on and people upset because they can't get what they wanted and, you know, all the problems associated with barter. And he was just kind of musing to himself and just says, oh, this is ridiculous. How primitive. Well, somebody overheard him and said, well, if you can do better, show us. And he said, okay, I will. Tonight, if you're interested, come under that big tree over there and somebody bring me a tan cowhide. So nothing else to do in the community, no movies playing, and everybody showed up under the tree that evening, and somebody brought the stranger this big cowhide. So he took the cowhide and he had a little punch that would punch out these rounds, and there'd be this cool little insignia on one side. And he punched out the rounds, and he gave each family 10 rounds. And he said, these rounds represent a chicken. Now, you can use these rounds to exchange instead of how you're doing now. So that's the valuation. A round equals a chicken, and you can use that exchange. And everybody went, wow, this is a great idea. This is going to make things easier. And so the crowd was starting to disperse. And one woman said, well, you've done us a tremendous service. How can we possibly repay you? And he said, well, I don't want anything now. But I'm going to come back in a year, and I want the 10 rounds back, and I want one more round. So you're going to give me 11 rounds back. Oh, okay, that's fine. Hey, well, where will the 11th round come from? Oh, you'll see. Okay. So the community went about their business, and they were using these rounds that represented a chicken, and that was their medium of exchange, and it worked great. It did facilitate trade. It took all the arguments out of you got something I need and whatever. So it made the whole process of exchanging goods and services much, much easier. But everybody was thinking, where am I going to get the 11th round? Where's that going to come from? And they started thinking about, I've got to repay this. Mm-hmm. And it started to subtly change behavior. Because that thought was becoming more and more dominant. Where am I going to get this? How do I get this? And so when one of their neighbors had a problem, well, I can go help them, but, you know, if they have to sell their couple of cows or some furniture or something like that to get out of this financial jam, maybe I can pick up a few things at a deal. And so what happened is this undertow of competition started to come in. It was very subtle, but it was there. And little by little, they started moving away from cooperation to, I need to get this additional round. How am I going to pay it back? And so that is the effect that interest has on society. there was this artificial scarcity, and it was creating a society in which some had to lose in order for others to win. So if there were 100 families in the community and each received 10 rounds and each was obligated to pay back 11, what had to happen?
Somebody was going to be able to
do the extra round had to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Punch another hole in a cowhide.
Well, that would have been the logical thing, but the Federal Reserve won't let you do that. So the rules of the arrangement dictated that 10 families would have to lose everything in order for the remaining families to fulfill their financial obligation. And again, this is the effect interest has on society. Little example, when you take out a loan on the house, you go to the bank, you borrow $300,000 for your house, that act of borrowing $300,000 from the bank just created $300,000 in the economy. And I don't remember who the governor of the Bank of England was, but he said something to the effect of the mind is repelled by how simple it is to create money. People just can't get it. So you borrow $300,000 from the bank. I'm obligated to pay that $300,000 back. That act of borrowing created $300,000 in the economy. But I'm going to have to pay back $200,000 in interest. But that doesn't exist. But I have to pay it back. So we have millions of people out there competing to pay back interest. And just like the 11th round, somebody's going to have to lose. And this is also one of the reasons that the money system must expand. But just taking a look at that again, country borrowing from the International Monetary Fund. So I'm a country, I've got timber, I can grow coffee, I can grow tobacco, I've got copper, I've got coal, I've got oil, I have all these resources that are in the ground and I can't use them, and all the citizens of my country are living in poverty on top of all these riches. So I'm going to take a loan out from the World Bank, or the IMF, and I'm going to borrow $100 billion. So I can go in and I can develop my country and have all these resources. I don't know if any of you have read this book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It's by a guy named John Perkins. If you haven't, it's very enlightening, very disturbing. He worked for a company called Chase Mayne, which is very much like Halliburton. It was a big international contracting company. And he was their economic advisor. And he says, my job was to go to a developing country and help them, sell them on the idea of, if you borrow this money, we can put in a grid system, we can put in roads, we can build hydroelectric dams, we can deepen your harbor, we can do all of these things to develop your country so you'll have all these, you'll be able to tap the resources and everybody will be better off. Wow, sounds great, right? Well, let's say a country borrows $100 billion from the IMF to develop. And it's 10% interest. We'll make it real simple. So they have to pay back $110 billion. Borrow $100 billion, do their work, pay back $110 billion. And if it works, and you can develop and do that, then you do come out ahead. But what Mr. Perkins said is, he would always kind of fudge the numbers. And he had to make it work for the World Bank or the IMF, had to look good on paper. But he said, by the time I was done, you know, I would get him the loan. The money wouldn't go to the country. The money would come to my company. They would go in and do the work. They did everything that they promised to do. But he said that there was no way that these countries could pay back the loan. He'd fudge the numbers, twist them a little bit or whatnot. But he says it was impossible. And if we went into a country where 50% of the people were in poverty, by the time we were done, 75% or more were in poverty. Because they couldn't pay the loan back. Well, guess what part of the deal was? Well, if you can't pay the loan back, We get your coal at a discount rate. We don't have to pay attention to any of your environmental regulations. We can trash your company. We can do this, we can do this. You will vote with us the way we want to in the United Nations, blah, 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 blah. So there was a lot of leverage attached to that. And this is an old number, but for every dollar borrowed from it, for every dollar borrowed, a developing country will pay back 13 with interest. And that's an old number. I'm sure it's much worse than that.
Oh, dear.
But it's a great way to enslave countries and people economically. And that's the business model. So we've been able to develop a lot of stuff, but a lot of people have paid a pretty heavy price for that. And so, again, given this arrangement, the money system, it has to constantly expand. The economy must grow. And I took a few slides out, but here's a thought to ponder, and if we had time at the end or another time, it's worth pondering. If the economy must constantly grow, what happens on a planet that has finite limits? And what happens when those limits get hit? Another topic of conversation, really worthwhile to have that. But kind of continuing along the lines of interest.
Yeah, boy.
Again, this is a study that was done in Germany, and they had 10 groups of 2.5 million households in each group. So total of 250 million, which is probably the population of Germany at the time, I suspect. So they were studying who pays interest and who benefits from the interest. Well, the first eight of these 2.5 million in each of these groups, they went in the hole. They lost money. This group came out ahead a little bit, and the 10th group did quite well. Now, if you think in terms of life force, life energy, this group is not providing any value. They're not creating anything, but they are extracting life force from all these people. And so, again, makes it difficult for these people. I mean, they're trying to pay back their 11th round. Where am I going to get the money? How do I do it? And that becomes kind of a preoccupation. So it has a huge effect, and we just kind of take for granted that, you just pay interest. That's just the way it is. It doesn't have to be that way. There are many instances where it was not there. But what do the scriptures say about usury? Well, Deuteronomy, unto thy brother, thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all thou settest thine hands to. And in the Quran, what ye put out is usury to increase it with the substance of others shall have no increase from God. So if I steal someone else's life force with interest, I'm not going to get life force from God. And Pope Leo XIII, on one side is the party which holds the power, the wealth, which manipulates for its own benefit, the sources of supply. On the other side, there are the needy, powerless multitudes, sore and suffering, rapacious usury, though more than once condemned by the church, is practiced by avarice and grasping men, so that a small number of very rich have been able to lay upon the masses of poor a yoke little better than slavery itself. So we might not have slavery the way it used to be in the past, but... And then here's from our friend DK and Sister Alice. This out of Return of the Hierarchy. Must be recognized that the cause of all world unrest, of the world wars which have wrecked humanity, and the widespread misery upon our planet can be largely attributed to a selfish group with materialistic purposes who for centuries have exploited the masses and used the labor of mankind for their selfish ends. This group of capitalists has cornered and exploited the world's resources and staples required for civilized living. They've been able to do this because they've owned and controlled the world's wealth through their interlocking directorates and have retained it in their hands. They've made possible vast differences existing between the very rich and the very poor. They love money and power, which money gives. They have stood behind governments and politicians. Surprise, surprise. They have controlled the electorate, have made possible the narrow nationalistic aims of selfish politics, finance the world's businesses, control oil, coal, power, light, transportation, and they control publicly or subrosa the world's banking accounts. The responsibility for the widespread misery to be found today in every country in the world lies predominantly at the door of these certain interrelated groups of businessmen, bankers, executives, international cartels, monopolies, trusts, and organizations of directors of huge corporations who work for a corporate or personal gain. Sums up the situation and the driving force behind a lot of it. So, and some of you are familiar with Catherine Austin Fitz. If you're not, you really should check her out. She worked on Wall Street. She's a partner in a Wall Street bank, served as assistant director for HUD under first Bush.
And Clinton.
Yeah, first Bush and some of Clinton. She started exposing a lot of the corruptions. The feds came down on her. 11-year lawsuit. Cost her $6 million. She stuck it out. She won a tax on her. I mean, horrible, horrible, horrible. But the lady had the guts and the spiritual core to stand. You know, she talks about it. She understood this is a spiritual warfare.
And what was her name?
Catherine Austin Fitz. And so this is just a short little talk. And again, think life force. Think of making money work for the world.